Thanks for listening in to this episode of Power Lunch. The FM Power Lunch is an opportunity for us to talk about how our faith can go to work. We explore ideas by interviewing different people and learning from others about how our faith and work intersect. We're glad that you can listen in and hope that you'll join us in person sometime. Learn more at bethelfc.com/powerlunch. Hey, everybody. This is my friend, Scott Holdman. Okay. Welcome to the table this morning. Well, I am delighted to have you, and I have loved being your friend for many years. For those who don't know you, can you give us a little introduction to who you are?
Yeah, that could be a esoteric answer or a short answer.
Let's go short.
Okay, my name is Scott Holdman. I was born in Minot, North Dakota. Lived there up until my first year of high school, moved to Grand Forks, North Dakota, went to the Harvard of the North, UND, then came here.
Oh, that was funny.
It's a mixed crowd, I can tell. Let us not be a house divided. It's just a different shade of green. Also, Prakash is my dad, so it's like I also adorn the other shade of green.
Okay.
That's me. I live in Fargo. I'm a philanthropic advisor, which I help family foundations to design and to cultivate and create programs to find fulfilling in their giving and make an impact.
That was an incredible statement there. We'll come back to that. You're also a dad?
I am a dad. I have two girls. Yes.
Yeah. How long have you been married?
I have been married since 2007, September 17th, 2007. Points. My wife's not watching, but I know the actual date.
I'm super impressed.
And actually, when anybody asks, it gives me an opportunity to remind myself what it is.
Yeah,
so I never forget.
That was good. It's good.
And she's Canadian. At the time, I was, North Dakota was concerned about losing people. I don't know if that's still a thing, but particularly for young people, I don't know if anybody was around then, but it was like North Dakota, we're losing people. And I was chairing a North Dakota Youth Development Council. It helped to advise on the Workforce Investment Act in the state of North Dakota. And I said, I am adding plus one. So I've imported one Canadian to
yes.
the ledger of North Dakota.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
And we've added two plus then. So
we've multiplied.
Yes, yeah. And we've multiplied.
You obeyed the first commandment in the Bible.
Yes.
Yeah. I learned that was be fruitful and multiply.
Okay.
In a very awkward moment when my professor congratulated us for having a child.
Oh, you were fruitful.
And I was so tired, I couldn't remember what the first commandment was. And he reminded me. Enough about me, Scott. Back to you. Can you restate that statement you said about philanthropic and family foundations? That's pretty significant.
Well, instead of restating, I can add some, maybe some commentary
Go
to
for it.
What that is. And so... I am just at the service of a few families that engage me to basically be, nobody else likes this term, it's not an industry term, but I would explain what I do. I'm like a philanthropic butler. So basically there's a set of tasks that need to be achieved, and I will do those tasks. And it doesn't matter what those tasks are. The end goal is about creating greater fulfillment and making a difference around us. So that's my life task at the moment.
I love that. So years ago, when I first met you, we met when you were working for the Impact Foundation, and we were working together on some Giving Hearts Day things, and you made a statement to me that I just want to affirm to you how it's impacted me, and then I would love for you to make comments about how you've grown from this. But years ago, I was on a board, and we were being trained in how to ask for money and this kind of things, and you gave us some good thoughts about, one, the pie is not limited. So be really careful how you think about, giving and this sort of thing. Two, I became convinced after visiting with you that I think everybody wants to be generous at some point. That generosity could look a lot of different ways, but deep in our hearts, we want to give back. There's something about us that's made unique. And three, that it's my responsibility as somebody who may ask for money that if I find a donor that I'm prospecting and I discover their heart isn't in alignment with my mission, I will love them best if I help them find where their heart finds alignment. And I just want to affirm those things in you because it shaped me, and I'm so grateful for it. What would you add to that? Or how would you refine some of those thoughts these days? Because that's been a little while.
Well, something I think to take under consideration is it doesn't matter what industry you're in. We're gathered here under the auspices of faith. And so the tent is much larger than these individual things we become obsessed with. And in particular, in fundraising, the obsession is around money. And in our culture, I think you could say it's about money. And so really, you know, some of those things you just illustrated is simply just shifting the focus from money to meaning. And we're all here trying to find our own individual life task for the moment. Life task, by the way, is a phrase that's Carl Jung. You know, if you say something like following your purpose, that could be really big and may take you your entire life to define what your purpose is. But you go through these seasons where you kind of know what your priority is or where to focus, and that's a little smaller, something that's going to stretch you, you know, but that you're headed towards, and that's a life task. And so, you know, part of my life task has always been to look at things from maybe a deeper point of view. The Franciscan friar, Rohr, he says a point of view is just a view from a point. And so part of a lot of things I'm involved with is collecting many different viewpoints and then trying to find where we've got some common ground to work together. Jonathan Haidt, the author of The Anxious Generation, which I'm sure everybody has seen, this guy, turns out he's totally prolific beyond that book. He's the one, by the way, that if you've ever heard the expression, the elephant and the writer, this is in a lot of Chip and Dan Heath's book, where our emotions make decisions and then our mind tries to rationalize them. It's like an elephant and a writer. So I've emotionally decided to buy this thing, and then I'm justifying it to my wife with my writer. It's like, we do need this automated, autonomous snowblower. It's a must-have.
That sounds amazing. Yeah.
So we justify what our emotional, you know, sort of elephant is, right? Jonathan Haidt created that. But he also did research around universal value theory, that it doesn't matter where you go, what culture you travel to, there's a set of values we all agree on. And for instance, fairness is a value that is transcendent upon culture and nationality. And I like to think that, you know, in a time where many things feel divided, that's just one of the lenses to look at, that a little bit deeper, we can see that the viewpoints are actually a lot more aligned than we give them credit to. So part of my task is to do that, whether if it's fundraising or giving away money or uniting community allies to make a difference, or just simply listening to somebody to reflect back the goodness of them, is to sort of echo this resounding sort of feeling we all have that there's something bigger, deeper that exists, that it flows through all of us.
Yeah, thank you for where you went with that. When you said looking through the lens, were you speaking specifically through the lens of fairness or through the lens of the shared?
The shared.
Human experience.
Yeah.
The
and,
experience.
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. One of the dangers of you and I having a conversation is it could go a lot of different ways.
Well, the curl of your lip, I didn't know if I was getting a smile or a question, so I limited my response.
It's a smile. This is my resting smiling face, Scott. Lean in a little bit more to that, because you just gave us a gift. I started with philanthropy and giving money, and you went to meaning. Where are you finding, how are you helping people get to that place, like you just did with me, of that pivot from, I know we're having a what can feel transactional conversation, let's go to another level. How do you help people pivot there?
Well, I appreciate everybody's, maybe I should give a disclaimer. There are some conversations which are direct, clear, and transactional. And there are some that are a little bit messy, a bit esoteric, but we plunge to a greater depth. So welcome to the esoteric conversation of great depth. Put on your seatbelt, and hopefully it's not too confusing when we're all done. But generally, I find that these pieces end up getting put together. It's great creative exercise. To answer that question, you know, there's these three forms of love. You know, I'll spare the Greek term, or you can footnote as a pastor, but you've got friendship, love, committal, love, and then, you know, passion, love. And when you're young, you don't know what commitment brings. But after a certain period of traveling this life, it brings a deeper wisdom. And so being married gave me a particular wisdom about people, which is, maybe this is a message for all husbands, is to like just stop talking and ask some questions. And then it's like, oh my goodness, there's a whole universe inside of this person. And Erin is an exceptional woman, if any of you have had the honor of meeting her. And because of her, I credit a very serious shift in my posture of understanding literally that people really are, they're a universe to explore. Hmm. We're obsessed with sending people to space and going places we've never been, or you know, going to different territories. Have you ever just thought about the human sitting next to you and the entire complexity of their universe? You know, there's so much we don't know. Actually, just recently they found out that bumblebees, only the queen, can live underwater. We just found that out. You know how much we don't know? Even though we're in this age of AI and complexity, the reason why we gather in these space circles is there's these ancient things we've known for some time, and that's the sacredness of God, which is in all of you. And so why, whatever your task is, whether if it be philanthropic or not, I happen to align in sort of a category, but that category shifts, and I think that's something for all of us in this audience, is there's an invitation to just understand that every person you meet is a planet to explore.
That's incredible. Well, this has been a great interview. Thank you for that philosophical input. And
see y'all later.
Yeah, yeah. No, tell me more. Lean in a little bit more. What have you been learning? Because, and maybe even give us a little bit of the background, because you grew up in a family that thinks like this.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Help me with that. What was that heritage like for you?
Yeah, there's a quote I like to say about my dad, which is true to my spiritual dad, Prakashu, but the older I get, the smarter my father becomes. It's a Mark Twain quote. And, part of my story maybe to share is for both my mom and my dad, you know, probably the number one thing we do for our kids is live our life well. It's not the words that we say, you know, they pick up things. And I know that only because that's my experience. As I aged, I realized what a gift my parents were. Mm-hmm. My dad grew up in a Southern church denomination. He moved over 18 times before he graduated from high school. And so he came to Minot, North Dakota. He was sent there to stay out of trouble. And then he never lost his Southern accent. So when I impersonate him, just know, we used to call it a speech impediment. He passed away a few years ago, but he had said, the people in North Dakota are so nice, why would we live anywhere else? So we never went anywhere. and also, my mom, who's with us today, we like to call her Dr. Mom because she has a PhD, and she got a PhD in special education. She's never confirmed this, but I think it's the number of concerning report cards that were coming back for her third child, which was me. She immediately went from bachelor's, master's to PhD. And
around
I'm like,
the same
I like
time.
To think I'm a PhD problem. She solved, hopefully. Because I grew up, I'm dyslexic, and it was a label that was hard for me to accept. And my mom did everything to figure it out in a time where there wasn't resources. So we would work on vocabulary words while I would jump on a trampoline. I remember one time I dictated a 5-page paper while putting to her because she was experimenting with what it's like to move and think and to learn. And
did you say putting?
I was putting like, the image, this is a weird talk. Okay, so the image I had was like, because she was like, why don't you try just like dictating it, like tell me what's in your, because this is the thing, it's like if you're dyslexic you can't get it out, so it's like I got a story, like I can tell you what the book says if you want it properly written. At that time that was very difficult, so she was like, just tell me what it is. So I said, excuse me, I'll be right back. So I went and got a little putting green I had, and then I pretended to be a CEO of a company, and I was like, mom, take this. In the book Hatchet, there is a young man in the wilderness, and he's abandoned with nothing but his hatchet, and the story begins. Wow. Scene one. Right. So anyway, it was great. But what it taught me was the ability to be resilient and creative and to continue to support those that you love. And so to give you essence of the background, I do have wonderful parents. And if I'm anything at all, it would be a modicum of a reflection of those two.
That's the Scott I know. And that's why I wanted you to come and share today, because I think for many of us, and now you're in a season of parenting, we wonder, you know, what will our kids become and what will our lives accomplish? And Scott, you are just such a bright light to so many people and such a delight. And you've gone through a journey that for many people, and I didn't know about your dyslexia diagnosis until about 5 years ago when you shared with me that you'd been asked to speak very publicly about it. What was that like to be invited to speak publicly about something that for a season of your life you hated the label, you didn't want to be known that way? Tell us about that.
Yeah, horrifying. some of you might know Haley Soap. Carrie Buckle, the founder, was like, hey, there's this conference. And she goes, you know, I put your name up to speak, and it's the keynote. So I was just very honored. But I was like, keynote, I'm like, in my head, I'm like, okay, that's like 30 minutes why people eat the chicken and soft vegetables talk. Like, I can write that in the car, you know?
Yeah.
And then she goes, here's the information. And it was 90 minutes.
What?
Yeah, thank you. That was my reaction. She, on the other hand, was like unfazed. She's like, yeah, it's 90 minutes. I was like, there's ex-presidents going around getting millions. They don't even talk 90 minutes. Like, how am I going to, 90 minutes? And then I don't know what's wrong with me that I just said, okay. I think it was because she was so unfazed that I was like, apparently this is a normal thing. People do 90-minute talks. Okay. So I did the only thing I could possibly think of that would fill 90 minutes, and that's tell my entire life story. So I did. I have a timeline from birth to present moment.
That's amazing.
And I did get maybe the only standing ovation I ever got, but it was to tell the story of the challenge of dyslexia. Because when you get the label, it can be both helpful and harmful. And at that time, to me, it was incredibly harmful. I was in second grade, Our Redeemer's Christian School. And I remember the first day I had to go to the resource room, and it literally felt like everybody with bright futures go on ahead, and everybody with a less than bright future take a left, which is me and this other kid, Chris Ott. I don't know how he turned out, but I'm sure he's doing great. So the less than futures, we took a left and went to the library to get extra help. And I lived with that as a torturous inner voice for years that still is in me that I have to work very, very hard. So it did shape a lot of things. Later, I did find dyslexia also comes, like all things in life, you have trade-offs. And what dyslexia provides is thinking and patterns, mm-hmm. The ability to just free associate. You know, there's some research at the Yale Center for Creativity, and they show people that kind of fall into this, you know, and there's a spectrum like many things. Of dyslexia, and they kind of show that our brains are just wired a little differently, which is not necessarily a medical term, but you were both giving math problems, my brain pulls from a very inefficient place.
Okay.
It's working harder than your brain. But if you give a creative solution, it's the reverse, you know, some abstract weird thing, you know, that feels great to me. My brain is super fast on the processing. And this just speaks to the unique tapestry that we all make up when we come together and bring differing opinions and voices and thoughts and characters.
And in so many ways, we're back to where we started in some ways of that universe that's inside each of us.
Yeah.
There's a beauty that when we become insatiably curious, we'd find and we discern more. And so for me, when you shared that with me, I remember that was a really milestone moment. Is that when you began to be more public about this situation, or had you already been more public about it before?
No, that, I never talked about it. I thought I would like lose my job if people found out, so I didn't tell anybody. I was scared to death about it. There was a precursor to that event. Also, Carrie was like, because I think she just didn't, you know, she was like, there's nothing wrong with it, you know, so she had asked me to talk to a group of parents. That was really horrifying. And then this 90-minute keynote, which is like next level terrifying. And now it's like kind of terrifying. But something happens, I think, for all of you. There's an invitation when you lean into what you think your weakest part of yourself is. And then you find at the other side, like most things, like all challenges, there's something good inside of that challenge. And, you know, there's the story. We all have your own story, you know, your story. And then we kind of have our story. Yep. By the way, there's a whole body of research that's now evolving that, you know, we evolve not because, like, survival of the fittest is actually kind of misunderstood. It's not the survival of the strongest. It's the best to adapt. But there's a whole body of research around altruism that essentially the reason why we are doing what we're doing as a species is because inside of us innately is the ability to connect, to communicate, and to collaborate. We're designed to be together. We have this loneliness epidemic, and now it's like a big revelation that it's like, oh, we actually need each other. And so we have our story, but then there's the story. Hmm. And there's life, death, resurrection, and purpose, and meaning, and fulfillment. And it doesn't matter the things you've caused or the things that have been you're a cause of or a cause to. No matter how egregious, terrible, sinful, that there is peace available when you lean into that. And that's embracing dyslexia was part of that lesson for me. And I have a daughter who also recently has been diagnosed. And I don't know, some of you can probably relate being a parent, but there's nothing quite feels like a kid wrapping their arms around you and saying they love you. You know, it's like, not that I had like a small heart like the Grinch, but my heart does, I felt like it explodes each time. I'm just like, geesh, does it fit in there anymore?
Yeah.
And she has tools I never had. I mean, I had my mom and a trampoline and a golf putter, you know, flashcards and like a little bit of tutoring help, which was basically kind of yelling at me to do it better and faster. Wasn't really... Great. Today there's a lot more things. And Missy's here from BioGirls. My daughter goes to BioGirls. And the other day in the car, this was last year's lesson, not this year. She just started a new one. She's like, hey, Dad, could you give me some feedback? And I was like, yeah, like, tell me more. And then she was like, you know, I just feel like sometimes you're just making me feel good. And I just, you know, kind of want to know what I can do better. And it was a BioGirls lesson. And I was like, honey, this could have been a great dad moment. And I totally messed it up because I went this way, which is not relevant to her at all. And I went, honey, corporations spend millions of dollars to try to get people to say that exact phrase. How did you do that? She's like, and then I just left thinking, maybe we send all corporations to BioGirls. This is the universal thing we need. But dyslexia did open up something. And also what I've come to see is that, you know, it's a little easier. Maybe some of you can identify. It's a little easier to recognize how beautiful somebody else's story is.
Yeah.
It's a little harder to recognize your own story. And I struggle with it. But it's a lot easier when I can listen to you and find so much beauty in that, that I can at least move into something not negative. Can I at least get to neutral? And yes, knowing that there is my story and there's your story and our story and there's the story and these all help.
Isn't that a beautiful moment? Because in so many ways, what your daughter is expressing is this is just what Holdmans do.
I appreciate that. We do say that.
In so many ways, there's a trajectory here of the generations will follow. And you know, for a lot of us, we may not have all been gifted that kind of heritage, and so we have to create those things. And I loved what you did there. You might have a future as a preacher because you had, like, connect, communicate, and collaborate, and they all started with the first letter. I mean, they're all C's. Like, that was really beautiful.
It's in my lineage. I can't shake it.
It was really good. That was incredible. As you think about this, I want to take one more side turn because I'm concerned about time. Tell me what it has meant to have older men in your life look out for you and to come around and help you see the beauty in your story.
There's a lot of ways to express the gratitude for that. I could pick a lot of stories. Yeah, certainly one of Prakash and others, and maybe I'll. It's meant a great deal, especially after my dad died. I was going through a really hard time trying to figure out. I was working too much and things were stressful. And, I had somebody come to my office, actually. I only met once, and they said, I want you to know you're under a spiritual attack and you're going to be okay. And having people that have gone before you is, I think, one of the richest gifts that I've received, and I feel everybody can have. And for what it's worth, you know, I do think everyone, and a possible invitation for you is that I think if you don't intentionally do it, it's hard to grow and help relationships to flourish. And if you don't, I would intentionally name somebody younger than you, somebody your own age, and somebody older, and make sure you're spending thoughtful time with those people. And it can shape everything. Just because, why not make it esoteric? You know, in the book, The Sabbath, Rabbi Joshua Abraham Hirschel. By the way, if anybody's read that book, I read on a Kindle, and it took me like forever to read it. And then I walked by somebody's desk, and they had it. And I was like, is that a pamphlet of the Sabbath book? And they're like, no, that's the whole book. And I was like, anyway, it's deep. But Joshua Abraham Hirschel says, the reason why we take a Sabbath isn't just for rest. The Hebrews were a slave culture. It's to remind you that you're not owned by anyone. You're not a slave. Mm-hmm. And so, if you're not a slave to things, if you've got rich, deep perspectives around you, and your disposition is, I'm going to encounter new planets today, I'm sure that's in the Bible somewhere, you start to put that together, you can see a little bit of a life philosophy that leads to a lot of fulfillment, because there is so many beautiful things happening around us all of the time. And that perspective, I think, is maybe only capable by spending time with people that are older than you, to answer your question of why it's so enriching. And I also think for some of you in the room, you'll also experience that challenges and traumas also accelerate that perspective. Because at the end of it, we're all checking out at some point. Mm-hmm. And so it helps to have a perspective to bring that point of view a little closer to you, and understand that some of these things we worry about aren't really needed. You know the verse about, like, build bigger barns? The other day I was thinking, it's like, when you're younger, it's like, you're like, dear God, can I have a barn, please?
Yeah.
And then you get to middle age and you're like, I'm so thankful I have a barn. And then you get older and you're like, what am I going to do with this barn? And I thought, why are we so obsessed with creating and building and acquiring when at the end, if you've met somebody with some age, it doesn't matter? And it's more about the being in their life than it is about what has been done.
It's pretty obvious to me that your life has been impacted by the greatest story of a Heavenly Father who created us in His image, with the capacity to communicate and collaborate. What was the other one?
Connect.
Connect, yeah. And that in creating us in that image, we recognize all of us are stained by what the Bible calls sin that keeps us from right relating, but in Christ that can be redeemed and that can be restored. The Apostle Paul had a phrase where he talked about, in our weakness, Christ is made strong. And I think for so many of us, and Scott, part of why I wanted you so much was because when you embraced your weakness on that day and you said yes, and then you told me about it, I wanted others to hear that. There's a tremendous beauty in taking that weakness and handing it back to God and saying, God, could you use this too? You know, one of my friends named his business 5-2 because some little boy had 5 loaves and 2 fish, you know? And those stories resonate with us. God can take what looks like such a damaged thing and a, you know, you kids with no future turn left here and the rest of you with an aspiring future go this way. How could we have ever imagined that we'd be here? And what a beautiful thing. And I had something happen, and so I want to share this story. 2 weeks ago, one of my colleagues, we volunteer at the local elementary school. We lead a small Bible club there, and we were really struggling with the kids, like our relationship with them and how we relate to them. And one of the ladies I was with bought a Bible for this kid, and I pulled him aside and I said, I don't have a Bible for everybody else, but she wants to give a Bible to you. And he looked at me with the most pained eyes and he says, is it because I'm a bad kid? And I almost fainted. And I'm so glad. I'm not the hero of this story, okay? But God did something through me that I will hope I never forget. I was able to square that little boy up and said, young man, I have never thought those words about you. I'm giving this Bible to you because I believe God has created you special and he wants you to be a leader in leading other people to Jesus. And you have the capacity for it. And his whole demeanor shifted. And the next week when he came, he was the first kid to say yes, and I think he might have believed me. Friends, we desperately need people around us who will square us up. Please don't think I'm the hero in this story. Who will square us up and say, I see the beauty that God has for you, and I want his best for you. And I'll do whatever it takes within the resources I have to be that person to point you that direction. Scott, you and I stand in lineages of men and women who have done that. And I wanted you to model that today so we could see that, so that we could embrace something better. Because the messy stuff is easy to see. What a mess. But the beautiful stuff, oh, it's so good. And it's so much better. And Scott, you inspire me. And I know that you have people here who for generations have prayed for you and men who have stepped in and said, I love you and my heart sees your heart. And friends, I don't know where you're at, but would you be willing to embrace that grander vision with us? To square up with each other? And Missy, God bless you for your work with the young women in our lives. My daughter has benefited from you and I love hearing that story. And let's multiply this, friends. We have the chance to do that. So let's do it. It's a beautiful thing.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Power Lunch. While hosted by Bethel Church, the Power Lunch is sponsored by Area Professionals. We'd love to have you join us. Learn more about our next upcoming Power Lunch at bethelfc.com/powerlunch.
FM Power Lunch. Learn about your faith in the